Excuse me.
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 Hello, everybody, and welcome to Morgadorks. This is a bi-weekly Daria podcast where we take an in-depth look at our favorite animated teenage misanthrope episode by episode. I'm Rob Press.
And I'm Nissa Lee. And today we are looking at season 5, episode 5. Lots of fives there. The story of D, in which Daria submits a short story for publication in a literary magazine, but gets rejected and suffers a crisis of confidence. Also, the fashion club goes humanitarian. And Helen's preparing snacks. The episode aired on March 19th, 2001, and was written by Jacqueline Reingold. This is the first of Reingold's two Daria episodes, with the other coming toward the end of this season. I haven't seen that at all yet, so looking forward to it. She has also written for Grace and Frankie, The Good Fight, and Law and Order Criminal Intent.
Grace and Frankie is one of those shows I always intended to check out, and I just never got around to it.
I've watched a few episodes and really enjoyed it, but, You know, other things happened.
Totally. It's Lily Tomlin, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll watch anything Lily Tomlin does. Okay. So I guess we'll get this out of the way right here. The story of D, of course, based on the story of O, which is an erotic novel published in 1954.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it centers around an entirely different kind of submission. Go ahead and check that out at some point if you want. For 1954, I have not read it. I've only seen the summary. For 1954, surprising.
Steamy.
Yeah, totally. All right. Do we want to get into our beat by beat?
Yes, we do.
Okay. So we open on the fashion club watching some fashion-related humanitarian awards and feeling good about themselves because the award show is donating to charity for every household tuned in. Helen inadvertently interrupts because she's having a loud but probably shouldn't be loud phone conversation with her sister Rita. They're talking about Erin, Rita's daughter. Turns out Erin only married her husband because he gave her herpes and she didn't think anyone else would want her.
Oh dear.
We don't have time to unpack all of that, but Helen laments our culture's outmoded views on sex, then realizes Daria is up in a room with Tom and runs up the stairs. She practically kicks the door down to find Daria alone, typing away on her computer. Satisfied, she leaves. Daria, meanwhile, receives a phone call from Jane, who's at the movie theater and wondering why Daria blew off their arrangements. Daria, who clearly lost track of time, realizes her mistake.
So we've often commented on how episodes of Daria will take like zero time throwing you into the conflict. But This episode, it takes its time unfolding the plot. And I think it works really well, especially because this opening scene is so damn entertaining. The humanitarian awards, which donate a ridiculously small amount to charity, and Helen's phone conversation, they both play with hypocrisy and irony in a way that's very on brand for Daria. It's almost like Daria herself is writing the episode. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll talk about it a little bit later. There are aspects of this episode that are very smart. I don't know. It's pretty neat. So we saw Erin's wedding in season 2. That was the episode I Don't. It was, of course, a complete disaster. Also, for our younger listeners, because they gave me herpes and nobody else will love me is down there among the worst reasons to get married.
Yeah, yeah. There are things you can do to work with that issue.
There are so many alternatives. Finally, when Helen asks Quinn if Daria is up in her room alone with Tom, and Quinn responds that she's not J. Edgar Winter, It is, one, amazing, and two, Quinn mixing up J. Edgar Hoover, the first director of the FBI, whose domestic surveillance and crime-fighting, quote-unquote, tactics were disgusting overreaches and abuses of power, and Edgar Winter, a musician.
I'm so glad you explained that, because I heard that joke and I was like, that is probably really funny if I knew who anybody was.
It's fantastic. It's good. I think there have been a few jokes exactly like that from Quinn, where she just totally mixes up like two names.
Oh yeah.
But I don't know. It never ceases to tickle me.
Yeah, especially because we don't really expect Quinn to know the people.
Right. Right.
But she does.
I would not expect Quinn to know who the hell Edgar Winter is. And J. Edgar Hoover, maybe. He was a president, so.
So it was in the curriculum.
Yeah, sure, somewhere along the lines. Mr. DiMartino has yelled that name at some point. Mm-hmm. After the movie, Jane asks where the hell Daria was, and Daria reluctantly admits she was writing a short story, and she's thinking about submitting it for publication. Jane's happy for her and asks when she'll get to see it, which is a concept Daria's just not okay with at the moment. Back at the Morgendorfer residence, the Fashion Vision Humanitarian Awards have come to an end and the Fashion Club is inspired. They kick around ideas for things they can do to support their community and settle upon donating a mirror to replace a shittier mirror in the women's bathroom at Lawndale High. I think there's an entire legion of creative folks out there who can entirely relate to Daria's "I'm creating a thing and I want to show it off, but I absolutely do not under any circumstances want the people closest to me to engage with it" stance.
Yes. Oh, hell yes. Writing is in so many ways an act of vulnerability, which is a word that we've said a lot in this podcast. And I feel like we're going to say it a lot in this episode.
Oh, yes.
Even in fiction, you're exposing a part of your mind that you probably wouldn't in your day-to-day relationships. It's scary to share, but people who don't know you, there's no consequences there.
Yeah, totally. I don't care what. I don't care if some rando reads what I wrote, but phew, Jesus Christ, I'm not, not showing that to my mom. Get the hell out of here.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, I don't want my mom to read that.
Yeah. So the font used for the credits at the end of the Fashion Vision Humanitarian Awards is the same font used for the credits at the end of Daria. I noticed these things so that you don't have to.
Thank you. I have to say that the Fashion Club's idea to replace the mirror in the girls' bathroom, I think it's actually pretty brilliant. The shitty mirror can wreck self-esteem, which can be so precarious for teenagers, you know. And self-esteem is really important to, among other things, academic performance. So,
Yeah, I think we're actually going to end up being pretty impressed with what happens with the Fashion Club throughout this episode.
Yes.
We will get to that in a little bit. At the pizza place the next day, presumably, Pharaoh Munch's The Light plays as Jane's being oddly avoidant, and Daria picks up on it immediately. Seems she ended up letting Jane take a look at the story, and Jane's trying to avoid talking about it. Jane's being extremely kind, but having trouble pinning down exactly what it was she didn't like about the story. Daria, characteristically, isn't too wild about it herself. Jane suggests she show the story to Tom, which is yet another thing Daria's not too wild about. Back at the Morgendorfer residence, Daria's watching TV when Jake wanders in, trying to sew a button back onto his shirt. Daria helps him out, then laments the fact that she sucks at writing, then says she doesn't want to talk about it, then talks about it some more. We've all been there. Jake turns it into a rant about how the song he wrote for the military school musical got shot down, and Daria quite sensibly just leaves the room.
You know, before the rant, Jake does have a good dad moment where he is busy with his, you know, sewing on the button or not sewing on the button. And he's like, wait, who told you you were bad at writing? And like, that's a good moment.
Yeah. I'm glad you pointed that out. Yeah, this is actually a relatively okay episode for Jake. Like, yes. They have some good moments, and that's one that I definitely wish I'd actually covered in the beat by beat.
Well, that's why you have me here.
Yeah, perfect. The first of many quotable things in this episode, Daria talking to Jane about the short story, and Daria says, "I can't show it to Tom. It's too intimate." Jane says, "Daria, it's about a flesh-eating virus. How is it too intimate?" And Daria comes back with just the legendary quote, "You'd think it was pretty intimate if it was eating your flesh."
Oh my God. The levels of this statement. It's just, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic.
I don't even want to break it down. It's just perfect as it is.
So, you know, we mentioned vulnerability all of a couple minutes ago. We get to bring up that word a lot in this episode, as Nissa said. It's extremely difficult to show someone who you care about a creative work of yours, especially something written. You know, we haven't really seen where this is going to go, but this is a potentially very exciting way to really explore Daria's character. And you know, it opens up a lot of avenues. So, you know, it's an episode with a lot of potential.
Agreed. So let's just walk through her train of thought right now, because I think it's worthwhile. She's thinking, "I love and respect Tom. He's very smart. If he reads my story and does not like it, maybe he won't like me. The story is in effect me. Maybe he won't think I'm as smart as he does now. Maybe he'll lose respect for me. Maybe he'll think I'm weird in a bad way. Maybe he won't want to be with me. And then I will have shown him a piece of myself that I can't take back, and he'll just be walking around in the world with it."
Yeah.
I don't have experience with this at all.
Well, that's that like kind of unspoken part of you know, the unspoken part of the relationship that comes to an end is the, "Oh no, now there's somebody out in the world with a lot of knowledge that I really wish they didn't have."
Yeah. Oops.
Yeah. Oh, geez. That's bad. But yeah, you can see the wheels turning with her, and you can see how like painful the experience is for her to just like talk about this thing that she's made. I don't know. We both relate to this really hard.
Yes.
and we're going to be relating to this really hard for the rest of this episode. So I know, like, I haven't done a whole lot of fiction writing at all over the last, like, I don't know, decade and a half. I did a lot of fiction writing in college and shortly thereafter. And I haven't had anything published. I also haven't actually tried to have anything published beyond like one or two stories a couple times. But, you know, I've been through this process of the, like, I created this thing. Let me show it to a very specific and limited group of people. Let me submit it for publication. Let me see how that goes. There's an antsiness and a dread, and there's pride buried in there somewhere where you're like, I made a thing. I did a thing. But then there's, I'm showing other people the thing. And what if they hate me for the thing?
Yeah.
And I know you, you've had things published, I think.
Yes.
Yes.
But before I say anything about that, I just want to acknowledge that you've also put many things out there for people to, you know, consume, to read, you know, without going through that process. Like, you've taken the leap and just shared it with people. And
that's true.
Like, yes. The internet. And
yeah, I've done web comics. I've done stuff like that.
Yes. And that in itself, I think, is very brave and exciting.
Oh, well, thank you. That is extremely awesome. Generous.
I mean, like, you know, like, you no longer know who your audience is. You're just throwing it out there, and it's like, well, if somebody wants to read this, you know,
yeah, totally,
it's there.
It's cut out the middleman.
Yes, exactly. So that everybody knows my own personal experience with publication is, well, I went to graduate school for creative writing. I studied poetry because I didn't want to make money ever. I do have some poems published in literary journals online. And I think there may be one in print, but it's online as well because everything is online.
Yeah, can't avoid that.
Yeah, exactly. But I haven't been published or tried to be published in quite a long time. And honestly, I'm really only picking up my writing practice again, you know, in the past year. So a lot of these... the talk of rejection here, because I'm starting to think about sending my work in places again, you know, talk of rejection is stuff that I'm like currently grappling with once again, because it never gets easier.
No, absolutely not. Not even a little. I mean, I'm sure there's probably a point where like, you know, if you're an established... You know, at some point you're like, all right, yeah, I set it out. They didn't like it, whatever.
Yeah.
But man.
But not me.
No.
Especially not at this point.
So all this to say, if we sound like we relate to this episode a little bit more, and it sounds like we're a little bit punchier about this episode in general, that's where that's coming from.
Oh, yeah. We relate.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Jake wrote show tunes?
Yeah. What? Somehow I'm really not surprised about this. And perhaps it's just the way he delivers all his lines. Like, he is on stage all of the time.
That's a really good point. That's a very good point.
Yes. But it's worth pointing out that this conversation is the one in which the theme of rejection starts showing up in the other plot lines. And I really like how, you know, that theme is bleeding into everything. You know, it's picked up everywhere. There is a thread.
Totally. It's a smartly written episode.
Yes. It is intelligent. That is for sure.
Over at Sandy's house, the fashion club is meeting to talk about how to pay for the mirror that they want to donate. Quinn suggests they sell a newsletter offering advice to fashion victims and predicting fashion trends. The suggestion passes unanimously and we're off. Back at the Morgendorfer residence, it's hours later and Jake is still pissed about his song getting rejected. Helen comes home from a late night at work and asks Jake where Quinn and Daria are. He's not sure where Quinn is, but he knows Daria is up in a room with Tom. Helen, looking for a reason to interrupt, decides to ask him if they want some snacks. Daria is, in fact, in her room with Tom, but the action's about as chaste as it gets. Tom's reading Daria's story. And he loves it, and he tells her it's really good. Better, even, than something he saw get published in Musings magazine. He suggests she submit it to them, but Daria is lacking in motivation because she's scared of rejection and thinks it's not good enough. Tom suggests she let the magazine decide, and nobody has to know. So, of course, when Daria is dropping the submission off at the post office, Mr. O'Neill wanders by and sees the address label. He's giddy, because he's Mr. O'Neill, and you get the impression Daria's attempt to keep this story under wraps is not going to go very well. And that is the end of Act 1. Again, a quote. When the fashion club is discussing what they're going to do to fundraise, Quinn says, "Why don't we do what we do best?" And I believe it's Tiffany says, "Quinn, no one's going to pay us to eat carrot sticks." Actually, it might be Sandy.
It is Sandy. It's Sandy.
Yeah.
She says that. and then Quinn is like, I mean, tell people what's wrong with their outfits. And then Tiffany and is then the Tiffany. One yes, that yes. says, but we do all that day. But we do all that. Blah, blah, blah. But we do that all day for free. That's why everyone likes us. Oh my God, Tiffany.
It's fantastic.
Yes, it is.
This episode, and you know, again, we'll talk about it a little bit later as the Fashion Club plotline keeps going. But I feel like perhaps more than any other episode we've seen so far, which is kind of crazy to say, 5 seasons in, I feel like Jacqueline Reingold actually has a very good grasp on the Fashion Club perhaps the greatest grasp we've seen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is, it's just fantastic. Yeah. And we get so much Tiffany.
Oh, my God. More Tiffany. Always better. We don't really get a glimpse of the story that Daria wrote, aside from it being about a flesh-eating virus. But it's interesting that Tom and Jane's takes on it were so varied. Like, I think it's a nice touch character-wise that Jane doesn't particularly like it, but she notes that it's because she doesn't really have the appreciation for literature that Tom has. And then when Tom sees it, he loves it.
Yeah, I agree. I really appreciate that. I really appreciate Jane's self-awareness on the matter. Like,
yes,
she seems like the kind of person that likes a good plot, you know?
Totally.
And Daria, from the description of the style, I don't think she's really going for plot here.
No. It seems like Daria is going for something a little bit more like literary, I guess would be the word, a little bit more high-minded, maybe.
Yeah. Like changing points of view or styles, something like that. I don't know.
Right.
But it shifts.
I say this as someone who can stare across the room at his enormous collection of Stephen King books. I feel like Jane is more a Stephen King reader.
Probably.
There's no shame in that.
No. No, not at all.
So I don't want anybody to take it that way. I feel like, you know, and she is fully cognizant of it too. Like you pointed out, like the fact that she's self-aware enough to be like, look, this is not my kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
You appreciate that, especially in someone who is reading your story. Like if you hand someone something and say, please read this, please let me know what you think. And they say, look, I didn't necessarily love it, but also I wouldn't necessarily love it because it's just not for me.
Yeah.
Like, there's value to that.
Also, I don't know why you asked me to read this.
Yeah. Aside from the fact that we are best friends.
Yes.
Also, Jesus Christ, the lump in my throat when Mr. O'Neill happened by as Daria is dropping her story off. I feel that awkwardness. Like I feel her tentativeness in my bones.
Yeah, it took me a little while to understand where they were. I don't know, like maybe I was being particularly dense, but I was like, why is there a mailbox drop in the school? I was like, I don't understand what's going. Why? What's going on here? But yeah. It was awkward. And of course, you know, that idea of like the secret's going to get out. It's hard. It's hitting, it's really hitting both of us, Rob.
it so is. All right. Act two opens with Quinn and the other members of the fashion club working on the fashion newsletter. They get it printed and begin distributing it throughout the halls of Lawndale High, but the enthusiasm is limited. Mm-hmm. Daria and Jane are talking about Daria's story, and Jane is stoked that Daria submitted it, but her enthusiasm, as you might suspect, is not reciprocated. Over in Mr. O'Neill's class, Mr. O'Neill, being Mr. O'Neill, finds a well-meaning way of totally fucking over one of his students as he brings up Daria's story in front of the class. She is less than pleased. Later in the hallway, Jane sympathizing while Daria is still fuming. Jody approaches to congratulate Daria on having a story published. Daria points out it isn't published, and she's in the middle of doing that when Kevin and Brittany drop by to talk about it. Kevin, Brittany, and Jody are out of the picture for less than a second before Ms. Bartsch drops by to congratulate Daria, and then bolt when she realizes she just spilled the beans about her and Mr. O'Neill. We learn a little too much about their private time before the scene mercifully comes to an end.
Were there beans to spill, really? I mean, like, weren't they all on the floor to begin with?
I think it's less a matter of, like, spilling the beans necessarily and more like, oh, I should not be bringing this up.
Maybe whatsoever. I overshared.
Yeah. I walked into this one. I just want to take the time to note, because I'm not sure we've noted it before, Tiffany has posters of herself on her wall.
Yeah. This is the first time I noticed this. I don't know if there was an opportunity to notice this in the past. But it seems that lately Tiffany's been getting a little more attention from the writers and the animators, and I am not disappointed.
Yeah, it's very good. I didn't realize how much I appreciated Tiffany until you know going through this run through. But yeah, she's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I have much more of an appreciation for the Fashion Club in general this time around. I think, even though still like you know we had that Fashion Club centric episode you know 1 or 2 weeks ago, and that was a little too much.
Yeah.
But you know if we had like this approach to the Fashion Club for that Fashion Club centric episode, God, it would have been perfect. Anyway. The cut to Mr. O'Neill's class absolutely set alarm bells off of my head. Like the moment we see that cut, it's just like, oh Jesus Christ, this jackass, he's going to do exactly what Daria asked him not to, isn't he? And then of course that's exactly what happens. It was just a matter of time.
We know exactly. We know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Jane's quote is, he meant well for a teacher that does nothing well.
It's good. I think it's worth mentioning that the limbo that a person experiences when sending off their work for publication is just really terrible. And you kind of touched on it a little earlier, but like you're proud of yourself for taking that chance and you have a little bit of hope, but you also don't want to say anything to people about it because suddenly you are very superstitious. and also, what if you mention that, you've mentioned that you've submitted work and then you have to tell people later, oh yeah, I was rejected.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this limbo can last months. For example, the New Yorker's About Us page says they respond to fiction submissions in 90 days and poetry submissions in 6 months. And that's the New Yorker. I mean, most literary journals that accept unsolicited publications are understaffed, underfunded, and overrun with submissions. And some struggle to respond within a year. So, you know, keep that in mind when the plot unfolds.
and a lot of them don't allow simultaneous submissions either. So like, you know, you're submitting something to a publication and the publication's like, all right, well, we'll get back to you in, I don't know, let's say 50 weeks. And if they don't allow simultaneous submissions, like that's everything for that one piece that you've put together, you know?
Yes. I will say that that practice of not accepting simultaneous submissions, especially for poetry, I'm not sure about fiction, it has gone by the wayside for a lot of publications.
I would hope so.
Even Poetry Magazine accepts simultaneous submissions now. I think when I was first submitting stuff, they did not. So
I think in like the digital age, it makes sense that we're finally moving past it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's just so many publications out there now, with the boom of the MFA, there's really no point, you know, like you could have your stuff out so many places. There's not like five journals to choose from for any kind of, you know, legitimacy.
We can all kind of think whatever we want about Ms. Bartsch finding out about Daria's story from Mr. O'Neill during an activity that involved oils and a lack of clothing. I would ask what the hell Mr. O'Neill's doing bringing up any student in the middle of that.
Yeah.
I will, however, say that it's kind of a nice touch and very on brand for Ms. Bartsch to congratulate Daria on following in the tradition of great female authors.
Yeah, it was sweet. Well-intentioned.
Totally. Yeah. Well, she meant well.
Yes.
At the Morgendorfer residence, Jake's off in his own episode working on his old show tunes, while the Fashion Club laments the fact that all of the predictions in their newsletter have been named wrong by the latest Waif magazine. Daria's in the middle of mocking them when she notices a letter on the table from Musings. She heads into the kitchen and opens it. only to find she's been rejected. Invalid Litter Department by At the Drive-In brings us to our second commercial break and the end of Act Two.
So that was what, like a few days, a week?
Yeah, yeah.
She
amazing turnaround time that music has. That is
a really great response time.
And snail everyone mail, too.
Submit. Yes. It must be down the street. Everyone submit to musings.
Seriously, Jesus. I think it's Sandy whose response to Wave Magazine, like proving all of their predictions wrong, was who would have thought that brightly comic tones like Peach and Lemon would suddenly come into vogue? I need to be alone.
You got her O's down pretty well.
Thank you. I've been trying.
Yeah.
I've kind of already sung the praises of Jacqueline Reingold a little bit, but I'm quoting this episode a ton because there's a lot of really great stuff in here. It's a lot of fun so far.
Yeah, and I like that she's added a little nuance to Sandy's regular calculating bitch persona.
Yes.
It's clear from the very beginning that Sandy has actually put some thought into this entire enterprise, and that makes their failure just hurt even more.
Yeah. I'm kind of like, now that I mentioned it a little bit earlier, like the idea of could we have like a Reingold episode? A Reingold episode that is focused on the fashion club. I'm like wish casting for it now.
Yes.
So I'm pretty sure the episode itself is going to call this out in a little bit, but I just want to note for any aspiring writers out there, if you submit your stuff for publication, you're going to get rejection letters, a ton of them. That's the norm. It happens to everybody. It's no reason to be discouraged. Stephen King's On Writing actually talks a fair amount about dealing with rejection letters. Regardless of what you might think about King's abilities. And he's kind of the first to admit that he writes popcorn and candy stuff, not literary classics. It's definitely a book worth reading if you're interested in writing.
Oh, I agree. I have to admit that I have not read any Stephen King novels, but I have read that book. It's something I need to rectify at some point. It's just, you know, who has the time man. Of the day, yeah. man?
If you need recommendations, hit me up. I got them all. I will tell you, check out his short story collections. I think Night Shift in particular is maybe my favorite one of his. But the thing about Stephen King is that I'm getting off into a Stephen King tangent. I'm sorry. So the thing about Stephen King is that he doesn't plot his stuff out. And I think he talks about this in On Writing. Like he considers stories to be fossils and you just kind of dig them up. Mm-hmm. And then how good you are with language is sort of, you know, are you digging with brushes or are you digging with a jackhammer? And so he considers the story as a thing that already exists and he's just unearthing it. So he doesn't bother with like plotting and outlines and stuff like that. And most of the time that does not necessarily work out all that well. Stephen King's endings are kind of legendarily terrible. The Stand in particular, it kills me because it's just unbelievably great for so long. And then the ending is just a wet fart. but he'll tell you that too. Like he'll say like, no, you know, this happens. And that's one of the things I appreciate about King and his writing is that he is very upfront about like the quality of the stuff he does. But his short stories don't have the chance to suffer from that. His because they're short stories, they, you know, it's a concept that he just kind of puts out there. And then he explores it for a little bit and he moves on. And a lot of the time they're much more engaging. They're much more focused. I don't know. They're very interesting. So I would say if you haven't read any Stephen King, dig into his short stories first.
That's really good to know. Because
they're much – I don't want to say much better because he really does have some amazing stuff. Like I think, you know, Dead Zone, The Shining.
You know, The Shining is one of my favorite movies.
Okay. So Stephen King did not particularly like the movie version of The Shining.
I know that.
Yeah. So there are a number of pretty substantial differences, but also like, I think the movie of The Shining is far better than Stephen King gives it credit for, but I also think The Shining, the book, is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm able to separate the two. Yeah.
Sorry. This is like a 10-minute Stephen King tangent.
No, that's okay. I mean, it's just, you know, further, you know, cementing, you know, the argument that I need to actually read his stuff at some point. But as far as a rejection is concerned, you know,
right.
The fact that you will get rejected doesn't mean that it doesn't sting, you know.
Especially, totally.
Especially at first. I know that some people actually aim to get a certain number of rejection letters in a year. So that's one way to deal with it, I suppose. I don't know if I could do the mental gymnastics that it takes to convince myself that, you know, that's okay, that, you know, that's what I'm aiming for. But yeah, if it works for someone, it works.
Yeah.
That said, I love the timing of the rejection letter in this scene. Daria is mocking the fashion club, and then she is immediately humbled. Everyone is a critic. And even critics have critics, Daria.
Yes. Yeah. It's pretty brutal. At least she experiences it in the kitchen away from everybody.
Yes. She has some space to have her moment.
Yeah. Well, she's about to have her moment over at Tom's house.
I have to say, like, I saw that, like, envelope, and I saw the envelope, and I immediately went to college admissions mode, oh, yeah. You know, where I was like, yeah. Little envelope means you've been rejected.
Yep. Same.
Yeah. I'm not alone.
We're all just kind of like traumatized from that, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what it is. Like the, you know, university system has traumatized all of us.
Act 3 opens at Tom's house where Daria shows up and has apparently decided that all of the shittiness she's feeling is going to manifest in being an ass to Tom. She blames him for the rejection she's feeling, and when he says it happens to everybody and she should submit it to other places because it's a legitimately great story, she accuses him of being insensitive, not caring if she gets rejected over and over again. He responds by saying she's being thick-headed and tells her she needs to grow up as she's storming off. So, good talk.
Ooh, you know, yeah. this conversation. Oh boy.
Yeah, there's a bit to unpack, right?
Yeah.
Look, Daria's clearly trying to manage the hurt that she's feeling by lashing out at the nearest person she can blame for it. And yeah, that's shitty of her. Tom appears to feel genuinely bad for her story getting rejected because it's clear he really did like it. And he does start off by being supportive, just as he says. But then he leaps right into insulting her. That's just not the way to go. You know, she's clearly in pain. She's clearly feeling down on herself. Telling her she's stupid isn't going to somehow make it better. It's two otherwise pretty smart people just being kind of immature shitheads to one another for like 30 seconds.
Yeah, you're right. It also made me think about, the fact that Daria is just, she's not used to rejection, right? And
yeah.
And that reminded me, like, I need to say this before I completely forget it because I didn't write it down in the show notes. That at least, in the poetry, in the poetry publication world, in the past, I think that some, you know, statistics have been pulled that say that that women tend to submit to journals less than men. That they have less poems out for submission for consideration at a time compared to men. So there's something weird about gender and rejection going on there.
Huh.
Yeah. I don't know if it's gender and rejection or that, like, you know, or simply that, like, you know, submitting to a publication means that you have to, like, to do a good job of it, right? You have to read and be familiar with the publication. You have to know their submission guidelines and follow them. And, like, this tells me that, like, if you have so many publications out at a single time and, like, ongoing, that maybe you're not doing all of those things, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe it's like, you know, in this case, you know, the men are like, oh, I don't need to follow the rules. And the women are like, I have to follow the rules in order to be legitimate. You know, it's something weird is going on there. I don't know if that is still the case. And I know that there are a lot of people who have worked to kind of break that down and to, you know, encourage people to, and women particularly, to submit like men and to, you know, yeah, to feel like that they're allowed to take up that space, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So I had to get that off my chest or off of my head before I forgot about it. It's there. Duty done. But also, you know, you talked about, you know, Tom being a shithead, and yeah, okay, they're both being shitheads. I don't know why I'm surprised that Tom knows more about the world of publishing than Daria does. I mean, like, he knows people. He's got boku bucks, right? But Daria's limited knowledge of the process of publication reminds me of two things. One, the internet is still developing its communities at this point, and online literary magazines were only just really getting off the ground in the mid-90s. So for the most part, they still weren't considered legit by the early 2000s when this should be taking place, right? So notice that Daria in the early 2000s mailed her submission out rather than emailed it.
Yes.
That means that there's still a lot of literary gate crashing that hasn't happened yet. And that there may not be a whole lot of transparency about the publishing process. So she's a victim of that, right?
Totally. And
two, Daria is not used to Daria is not used to trying and failing. Like I mentioned, she's not used to being rejected. She's not used to trying and failing. Like the fact that she has to face rejection and work harder in order to get what she wants, that's new to her. And there's a number three. There exists this really strange phenomenon in which people tend to believe that literary masterpieces were just slapped down on the page, perfect in their entirety on the first go. Have you experienced this? I feel like this is something I've encountered a lot, you know, in my time as a teacher, in my past life.
I don't necessarily have time as a teacher, but I know, you know, as someone who has had to edit things, you know, in the past, there are people who are very precious about the things they produce.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they seem to assume that the first draft is the final draft.
Absolutely. And when you're talking about novels and short stories that have been taught, you know, and, you know, somehow the author is an untouchable demigod genius that doesn't need to learn or practice, right? They just fart rainbows. And if you don't fart rainbows, then don't even try. I suspect that this is a product of our school teaching literature, as our school system teaching literature, is an object to be discussed rather than like a living document that a person can be in conversation with, like can agree and disagree with and add to, or, oh my God, even revise or adapt for their own purposes. Like, you can do that. You can rip books apart, you know?
Yeah.
Like, literally, tear those pages out, write on them. Some people won't even, like, dog-ear a book. Come on. Don't be so precious.
I will say I'm firmly in the do not dog-ear books camp.
I dog ear the shit out of my books, man. I write all over them. Yeah.
This podcast is over.
Anyway, all of this is to say that, like, we've been trained to regard talent in a really unhealthy way. We need to kind of deprogram ourselves, and it can be really easy for someone such as Daria to be rejected and think, like, okay, I guess that's it. I'm done. I'm not a writer, right?
Yeah.
It's hard to battle.
Absolutely. I think just about anybody, especially among our generation, can relate to the concept of, I tried this new thing and I didn't excel at it immediately. So, all right, I guess that's really not worth the time.
Yeah, and I was trying not to make it a generational thing, but I kind of think it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just I think it is, you know, in part because of our exposure to celebrity and the internet at a formative age.
Yes.
You know, and I think
social media has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, but I also think it's just the way that the way that schools have operated a lot lately. Like, you know, I think that setting your sights on college, like, you either have it or you don't, you know? you know, and if I can't find the thing that I'm really good at, and that I love to do, then I have to give up and go find something fast because college is on the way and I have to decide, you know?
Right.
Yeah. You can't tell that I haven't thought about this a lot.
Well, it's important to think about, because, like, if all we're going to have out there are the people who were great at the thing that they're doing the moment they started doing it, then you're missing a lot of the stuff that's in the periphery. You're missing a lot of the, hey, here's this thing you're reading, this thing that you love, is the 57th draft of this piece. This thing took the writer 4 years longer than you think it took them. You know, and there's something to that. There's something to knowing that, you know, even and going back to, like, the literary masters, like, I remember I think it might actually be in On Writing. There's a story that Stephen King tells about, I think it was James Joyce, who, like, he was just kind of, like, laying on his writing desk one day when his friend walked in. And his friend's like, how many words did you write today? How's the work going? And James Joyce says, I wrote 6 words. and the friend is like, that's actually not that bad for you, which apparently it wasn't. And then Joyce's response was like, yeah, but I don't know what order they go in.
I remember that. That makes me think of another point that our idea of what I think the internet has done in particular has changed art into content, and
yes,
and it puts a shelf life on it, and it puts a deadline on it, and gives us the idea that we have to always be creating in order to get attention, you know,
right,
and be relevant. So we don't feel like we have the time to enjoy the process and really, like, immerse ourselves in it to really learn it, you know?
Sure.
You know, that revision process is so important, and it's something that should be savored, right? But I think that we've started looking more at like the destination rather than the journey kind of thing, right?
Totally. And there is a creative, it becomes about getting something out there and making sure that like you're keeping a schedule or you're doing something specifically for the audience or you're trying to create content. You know, as you're saying, like I experienced this with my webcomic that I did, like at some point it becomes more of a job than it does an actual creative endeavor. And that sucks. It's so draining. It's so difficult. And, you know, like maybe it's noticeable in the quality of the work. Maybe it's not. Like I felt like a lot of the stuff that I ended up doing in the webcomic was actually pretty solid stuff. I was proud of a lot of things I was putting out, even when I was still completely drained by the process. And what it ends up doing is you get to a point where you're just like, this is not fun anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I'm still doing okay at it, but I know I'm not going to be in a little bit because I'm just not enjoying it the way I was because it's a job now. It sucks.
Yeah. When you're not enjoying it anymore, you move on.
Totally. That's what ended up happening.
Yeah, like if you don't find a way to enjoy that process, you know, then okay, time to stop. Yeah. As long as you've given it a shot, you know.
Right. I mean, I'll still put a comic or two together every now and then, and it's still a lot of fun, and the reactions are always awesome, and it's always like, man, why don't you do this for a living? And it's like, because then it just, you would never see another one again. That's why.
Yeah.
Back at Lawndale High, the Fashion Club is issuing a recall of their newsletter. They hand out refunds and ask that the students of Lawndale High ignore the advice they wrote, which isn't a problem because nobody read it. The newsletter finds its way into the dumpsters out back. Meanwhile, back at the Morgendorfer residence, Sparks Are Gonna Fly by Catherine Wheel plays as Jake excitedly grabs Daria to play her more of his show tunes. Daria's not super impressed. Jake handles the rejection about as well as his daughter has, and in that moment, Daria senses a connection. She points out that one creative work written as a teenager doesn't dictate your ability or inability to create something great. And, you know what, actually, we're just gonna go ahead and play that conversation.
So your reach exceeded your grasp. I'd rather have that happen to me than the opposite.
What do you mean?
You know what good is. That's how you know you didn't achieve it. That's a lot better than if you were putting out crap and thinking it was great.
It is?
You came up short because you were aiming high.
You're right, Daria! I did! I went out on a limb and took a chance! That took guts, didn't it?
Yes. Yes, it did.
Damn right, kiddo!
Seems like both of them are suddenly feeling a lot better after that one.
Yeah. maybe we should talk about that scene since we've just played the clip.
yeah, sure. For as shitty as Daria was in the scene at Tom's door, to me, this is right up there with some of her best character moments. In Phys Ed, we talked about how complicated Daria's approach to putting herself out there can be, like how mixed up her identity is in her apathy. And, you know, here we're seeing her say, look, even if things don't work out the way you want, it's important to try. And if you recognize what you put out there isn't great, it just means that you're capable enough to recognize it, which is more than can be said for a lot of folks. The fact that she comes to these conclusions, first of all, at the age of 17, and secondly, in support of her father and his aspirations, you know, all of that is just kind of icing on the cake.
Yeah, it's a really, really good moment. I think that seeing someone else she cares about encounter rejection is really the only way she could have come to that conclusion. She's not going to be that kind to herself, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah, like she sees it in Jake. She's intelligent enough to see like, oh, this is what's happening. I just went through the exact same thing. Good for you, Daria.
Yeah, seriously. She handles it better than I do. Jesus.
Also, Jake, his show tunes are all to the tune of Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yes.
So.
And by the way, the lyrics too, some of the lyrics are, we're the guys they call cadets. We're here to serve our nation, fighting stinking foreigners right after graduation.
Oh, no. Yeah. Poor Jake.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
Unfortunately, a reality for
many
people.
It's not inaccurate, and mm-hmm. that's what makes it terrible.
Yes.
Also, one other note about the Fashion Club. Right, I love,
because we can't not mention the Fashion Club.
Seriously, it's another part of this that's so good. They made a newsletter recall banner. It's this beautiful like sash that's just like hanging up above their table with like the nice script font that just says newsletter recall.
I don't think I've ever made a school banner in my life, but I can imagine that, you know, it takes time to put that shit together.
Yes, absolutely.
You have to admire the Fashion Club's initiative here on like so many levels. While Daria is going for the legitimacy of traditional publishing, the Fashion Club is going the independent publishing / zine route. And and no one reads their newsletter. It cracks me up. Like, audience is sometimes the hardest thing to pin down. And
absolutely.
And they learn the hard way. And you know, they're so ashamed that they actually face the dumpster themselves.
Yes. That's amazing that they would never be found.
They didn't get the 3 days to do it.
So we meet up again with the Fashion Club in the Lawndale High women's bathroom, where Sandy is introducing a plaque commemorating the plaque. It reads simply, "Lawndale High Fashion Club, we mean well." Meanwhile, over at Tom's, the phone rings. It's Daria. She's in apology mode, and Tom shows up at her door to the tune of Bring It On by Gomez, giving her all manner of guff about it. But clearly, things are nowhere near as tense as they were last time. Up in Daria's room, she apologizes, and Tom stops laying it on, and we appear to be back to normal. He asks if she's over the letter, and sure, except for the part where its text is emblazoned into her mind. But when she recalls what the letter said, Tom notes the editors asked her to keep them in mind for future submissions, which they generally don't do, and wouldn't have if they didn't think her writing had a lot of promise. Daria, who'd been assuming that that was just their boilerplate copy, suddenly has reason to be pleased. Also, Helen walks in on them kissing and just about dies. We end the episode with Jane and Daria up in Daria's room, where Daria is playing something that looks an awful lot like Wolfenstein 3D. It's kind of a nothing scene right up until Daria alt-tabs back to the new story she's writing. She's still got it. And we go to credits with Everything I Want to Be by Save Ferris.
Pretty nice soundtrack this episode, yeah, too.
Absolutely. Speaking of the word absolutely, I absolutely love that plaque.
Oh, yeah.
I love that they were recording Sandy's dedication ceremony. I love that Stacy didn't actually hit record. I love all of it.
Yeah. Do I dare say that this is the best Fashion Club storyline we've ever seen?
Yes. 100%. It's a lock. I cannot think of a more entertaining – I cannot think of the Fashion Club being more entertaining or more central to the theme of an episode without being the focus of that episode.
It just works so well.
It totally does. It ties into the themes super, super well. It's a healthy B plot. Like it's not, you know, it's actually got some substance to it. I don't know. I dig it. I dig all of it. I'm stoked mm-hmm. about it.
And you know what? Like, they're not writers, you know? They're not even, right, like, you know, very academically inclined, but they still tried.
And hell yeah, they gave it a shot.
You know, it's just, I admire it.
Absolutely. So Daria is not necessarily wrong to assume that the language she quoted sounds boilerplatey, and it is. But Tom's right in saying that editors generally don't tell you, keep us in mind for future submissions, unless they legitimately would not mind seeing something from you again. If you send them something god-awful, you're not getting that note back. Daria, who is all of like 17, should be extremely proud of herself for getting that kind of attention from these folks.
Heck yeah. As I said before, a lot of journals are just overrun. They're not going to try and encourage you.
Right. Yeah. It's not their job to make you feel better about yourself.
No.
So if they're telling you, hey man, this is great, you should probably send us something again sometime, you should probably send them something again sometime.
Yeah.
So yeah, another word of advice to those aspiring writer folk out there.
And good job, Daria.
Yeah, seriously. All right. I think that's about it for the beat by beat.
Yeah.
Didn't really have a whole lot for cultural context, even though I dropped a mini Stephen King cultural context in there.
Yeah. And we talked about literary journals and
Yeah. I think we wove that in fairly well. Listen to me patting us on the back.
good job.
We did a good job, damn it. All right, let's move on. So we want to get to our episode rankings?
Yes.
Okay.
just going in here. Oh.
No, hey, it's fine. We could talk over it because we have a soundboard.
Oh, that's right.
Ooh, so fancy.
I just wanted to say that I have no idea where I want to rank this. Going in
what? Completely unbelievable.
Blind. I know. It never happens.
Okay, so I'm going to throw this out there. Mm-hmm. Why don't we look at the other episode that focused heavily on Daria's writing?
Okay.
Which would be number 11, Right Where It Hurts.
Uh-huh.
Now,
I think this is better.
Yeah, I was going to say I know that I'm higher on that episode than you are.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just felt like I'm not gonna explain myself again.
No. No. So I as someone who, like I said, higher on that episode than you are, I think I agree.
Awesome.
I think this is a better episode than Right Where It Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to talk about where it sits in relation to some of these other things. I mean, you know, right above that is Phys Ed, and we talked about Phys Ed earlier in this episode, another episode where Daria goes outside of her comfort zone and she tries, and you know, she breaks out of that apathetic mold, I should say. And she goes and puts herself out there and makes herself vulnerable. You know, I think she definitely makes herself more vulnerable in this episode.
Right.
It's a much more personal thing for her. I don't know. I think this is better than Phys Ed.
I agree. I mean, like, Phys Ed is fun, but it's also ridiculous.
Yes.
the plot is just ridiculous. And this is just, you know, it just feels a lot more real and relatable for a lot of people. I mean, we're not the only people who, you know, people who have submitted to literary magazines are not the only people who have faced rejection, you know.
But they've faced the worst of it, so.
Those editors are brutal.
All right. So now I start to run into, I think putting it above Right Where It Hurts and Phys Ed, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I think when we get above Jane's Addition, I think when I'm looking at like Fire as kind of like the ceiling for it, in my opinion, I'm happy to hear to the contrary, but I would say like 7, 8, somewhere around there. Would 7, 8, maybe 9 would be.
And I'm trying to jog my memory of all these episodes. So like, what is your reasoning here?
So I think when you're talking about Partner's Complaint, Fire, I Loathe the Parade, you're looking at episodes that fit a little bit more into the overall like Daria canon, as it were, like in terms of, you know, they're telling an overarching story or they're part of the overarching story, in particular of Daria and Tom, just in general, which this story does fold a little bit of Daria and Tom, you know, general drama in. Not necessarily in like a serialized way.
Right.
Like this is,
that's, you know, true. I will say that, even though they had their moment of just being like ridiculous people toward each other.
Yes.
I think that I hated Tom a lot less in this episode than I have hated him in the past.
Yes. Yeah. Like his, when Daria is getting ready to apologize to him and he's just got the smarmiest fucking attitude about it. There's something I really appreciate about that.
Yeah.
I think we've all kind of been there in that, like in that mode of me and my partner had a disagreement. One of us was clearly in the wrong about it. One of us was clearly in the right. I'm fine. I am not at all mad, but I'm just going to give this, I'm going to give it a little bit of guff just to kind of like show that I am not pissed. You know, it's like, it's got layers to it, but you know, it's that notion of like, all right, I'm going to inject some humor into this. That way, you know, that you don't have to be super defensive and that things are okay.
Yes. And it shows a strength in the relationship that
yes,
we maybe haven't seen before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you look at Fire, you look at Lo the Parade, those are two pretty good Daria and Tom episodes. And I think this is up there with, even though it wasn't necessarily the focus of the episode, I think this is also a pretty good Daria and Tom episode. I mean, like, look, you know, you have, as you mentioned, you have that one scene of them being just total shitheads to one another. But, you know, prior to that, you have Daria saying like, hey, I trust you to read this thing that's incredibly personal for me. And you have Tom saying, hey, this thing that you wrote that's incredibly personal for me, first of all, I appreciate you doing that. Also, it's really good and you should submit it. I'm going to be super supportive about it. I don't know. There's a lot there that's very nice.
So you think it should go below I Lo the Parade or?
I would say above I Lo the Parade and below Fire. I think it should be number 8.
Okay. And why Fire?
I just love the episode of Fire. I love that episode a lot. It's a standout episode to me. If you told me going into this that the story of Dee would somehow sneak into our top 10, I would have, or like, if you told me at the beginning of this season that the story of Dee would sneak into our top 10, I would say, that's ridiculous. I barely remember anything from that episode. But it's a very good episode. It's very smart. It's very fun. It's got a lot of really funny moments. It's also got some really great character stuff in there. But when I start looking at like the, you know, the pantheon of episodes that I think about when I think, all right, what was a great Daria episode? I think, you know, Fire is kind of like the cutoff line.
Yeah. 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 I think that there's a lot about Fire where like the relationship between Daria and Jane, like really, you really see it tested there,
yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So I do agree with you. I think this is a comfortable spot because like you have, I feel like I Lo the Parade is really kind of sitting on that one moment at the end, you know,
yeah. Yeah.
Between Daria and Tom, where it's like, oh shit.
it's got its moments. Like I do remember there's a very good Jody moment in there.
Yes.
Like there's a lot to like
it
about
does.
The episode.
There is. But I think this is just a really, really well written episode.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, not for nothing, I think if you told me at the beginning of season 4 that I Lo the Parade would end up in our top 10, I'd have said you were crazy. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting at the very end of all of this to look at where everything landed and just
be
see
like, what the fuck were we thinking?
Yeah. How did this even work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So I think that does settle it. I think we're going to put in the story of Dee. Season 5, episode 5, over at number 8.
Woohoo!
Pretty good showing for Jacqueline Reingold.
Yeah.
So we have one last bit of housekeeping to take care of before we actually go into our outro. We got some fan thoughts. So I'm going to hit the interstitial music and we'll go from there. Oh no. There we go. So Lulu Van Hoagland on Twitter. Oh no.
Oh no.
It's doing it again. Oh jeez. Oh God.
It just keeps going.
Okay. I just called. I'm leaving that in. That's so good. I don't know if you guys, I don't remember if I left in any of the soundboard shenanigans over the last couple of weeks where like it would just start repeating for no reason, but yeah, now everybody gets to hear it. So Lulu Van Hoagland on Twitter, friend of the podcast. First of all, thank you for the pins.
Yes.
So I was super stoked about them.
Oh my God. They're amazing.
Yes.
And I the stickers are everywhere now.
So Lulu Van Hoagland had this to say about Camp Fear, and also in the middle of that provided a brief glimpse into the end of this season.
I think the main issue with Camp Fear, looking at it from the view of Boxing Daria, is that this episode is written specifically to show Daria's earlier life. The plot is built around that, but because it doesn't have the powerful resolution of Boxing Daria, you'll see when you get there. Thank you. It falls flat. She can't really learn anything because the point was to show how Daria's social reclusive nature has been a life-changing character trait.
Lifelong character trait.
What did I just say?
You said life-changing.
Life-changing. Okay. Let me say that again. She can't really learn anything because the point was to show how Daria's social reclusive nature has been a lifelong character trait. Since this is the main point, other elements of Daria's storyline get muddled. That's how I always read it anyway. There's a clear line to be drawn from this to Boxing Daria, but the episodes are far apart enough that the results are mixed.
Yeah, so I guess being the only one of us who's seen Boxing Daria.
Yeah, I can't really speak to this.
I think that there is something to this notion of, you know, we haven't explored what Daria was like as a child a whole lot. We can, of course, assume certain aspects. We can assume that her upbringing and the experience of, you know, living with her as a child, we can draw our own conclusions there, but we don't explore it a whole lot, and the show hasn't given a whole lot of thought into, you know, has she been like this her whole life necessarily? Like, we get the impression she has been. You know, Helen has hinted around to it a number of times, I think, but we don't really see that in action. You know, please go ahead.
I was going to say that this reminds me a little bit of the episode in which we learn about Daria's parents' past, because they're having friends from their hippie days come to visit, and we see how much they have changed since then.
Right.
But with the Camp Fear episode, Daria hasn't changed much. And the resolution to that episode is confusing. In part because, you know, she hasn't changed. And honestly, like, people's ideas of her haven't really changed all that much either, you know. I don't know. but yeah, like, I think that there's a difference between those two episodes because of the amount of change that's like inherent in the storyline.
Right. And we're talking about, I mean, with Camp Fear, we're talking about a difference of 5 years, you know, when mm-hmm. Daria was at the camp and when Daria is revisiting it. And I think, 20 something years for Jake and Helen. But also, like, you know, the 5 years between 12 and 17, pretty big. So the differences are magnified. And, you know, I think with Camp Fear, when we get All right. Typically, I guess in like the typical sitcom, Camp Fear would be Daria realizes that she treated it or that she Daria realizes that she's being kind of a jerk and she decides that she's going to try to like be nicer to the folks around her and she's going to turn over a new leaf and the people around her, you know, they appreciate her and all her complexities and yada, yada, yada. And we really don't get anything that nuanced from Camp Fear. It's just kind of there. It's just kind of like the ending just sort of happens. And I think I alluded to this. Like, I really wish that they had gone into it a bit more. Like, I wish that they had taken the time instead of like, you know, instead of Jane and Trent's trip to eating flavorless potato chips. I wish we had talked about, you know, the importance of the importance of this formative trip on Daria. Like, you know, what does she feel about the people around her thinking highly of her, but in like a really backhanded, shitty way?
Yeah. Like, yeah. So shitty. You
know, yeah. How can we dive into that? And we just didn't. And, nope. And it's just, it's a bummer. And, you know, some of that, I think, you know, we can revisit this conversation when we cover Boxing Daria, because I feel mm-hmm. like that's an episode that handles childhood Daria significantly better. That's as far as I'll dive into that.
Maybe we should open up a document for Boxing Daria and just like plug Lulu's comment in so we can remember to address it later.
That's not a bad idea. Might actually do that.
Yeah. I'm really good at organization shit like that.
Well, I'm glad one of us is.
Yes. Thank you, Lulu, for writing in again.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for the pins and the stickers. They are so awesome.
All right. I think that about wraps it up.
Yes, it does.
All right. So I'm going to hit interstitial. I'm going to see how many times it plays. We're going to learn together, Internet. Oh, my God.
Oh, here it comes again.
Oh, my God. Stop. All righty. That about wraps it up for this episode of Morgan Dorks. Check out our Patreon. You can sign up at patreon.com/MorganDorks for $1 a month. You can support our silly little mission and listen to an unedited version of each podcast a few days before it airs. I promise you the folks who donate to the Patreon won't at all regret it this week. As always, please feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at Morgan Dorks, reach out to us on, or email us at morgandorks@gmail.com or check out our website, anchor.fm/MorganDorks. We're also on Facebook, just, you know, search for Morgan Dorks. Special thanks as always to Outpost Daria Reborn. Link is in the show notes. And as always, thank you, Nyssa.
Thank you, Rob.
Yay. And thank you, listeners. We will see you again in 2 weeks for season 5, episode 6, Jesus Christ, Lucky Strike, here on Morgan Dorks. I didn't hit outro early enough. All right, there we go.